Good morning and welcome to the United Lodge of Theosophists in Philadelphia. This, our new year, has begun and we continue the work that is so important that we gather here regularly and abide by this declaration. The policy of this lodge is independent devotion to the cause of theosophy without professing attachment to any theosophical organization. It is loyal to the great founders of the theosophical movement, but does not concern itself with dissensions or differences of individual opinion. The work it has on hand and the end it keeps in view are too absorbing and too lofty to leave it the time or inclination to take part in side issues. That work and that end is the dissemination of the fundamental principles of the philosophy of theosophy, and the exemplification and practice of those principles through a truer realization of the self, a profounder conviction of universal brotherhood. It holds that the unassailable basis for union among theosophists, wherever and however situated, is similarity of aim, purpose, and teaching, and therefore has neither constitution, bylaws, nor officers, the sole bond between its associates being that basis. And it aims to disseminate this idea among theosophists in the furtherance of unity. It regards as theosophists all who are engaged in the true service of humanity, without distinction of race, creed, sex, condition, or organization, and it welcomes to its association all those who are in accord with its declared purposes and who desire to fit themselves, by study and otherwise, to be the better able to help and teach others. The true theosophist belongs to no cult or sect, yet belongs to each and all. According to that purpose, we meet twice weekly, Sunday mornings from 11 a.m. until noon. And next week's, the overall topic for the month is the path of spiritual evolution. And next week's topic is, does life have a purpose? So that's 11.
Does life have a purpose?
That's today. Sorry. That's today. Next week is the means to achieve life's purpose. So what we hear today will be woven into next week. Wednesday evening's doors open at 5:15. The reference library opens and stays open until 7:15, when we get ready for our 7:30 meeting, 7:30 to 8:30 p.m. on Wednesday nights. And we are still studying the Key to Theosophy. Let me get the date right. Yes, the 4th. The distinction between soul and spirit and the Greek teachings is the topic. Sounds interesting, doesn't it? The book table in the next room is open before and after all meetings, and the theosophical literature is sold at the cost of shipping and handling. There is no profit made. So you can avail yourself of that or go online, and all of that information can be given to you at the book table by the volunteer. We are all volunteers, and we operate strictly by voluntary contributions of time, service, and money, which goes strictly to this lodge to keep the lights on and the heat going and so forth. There's a small contribution box, or you can see the person at the book table. So once again, this morning's topic is, does life have a purpose? And we'll hear a short reading from The Voice of the Silence. Act thou for them today, and they will act for thee tomorrow. 'Tis from the bud of renunciation of the spirit that springeth the sweet fruit of final liberation. To perish doomed is he who, out of fear of Mara, refrains from helping man, lest he should act for self. The pilgrim who would cool his weary limbs in running waters, yet dares not plunge for terror of the stream, risks to succumb from heat. Inaction based on selfish fear can bear but evil fruit. The selfish devotee lives to no purpose. The man who does not go through his appointed work in life has lived in vain. Follow the wheel of life. Follow the wheel of duty to race and kin, to friend and foe, and close thy mind to pleasures as to pain. Exhaust the law of karmic retribution. Gain cities for thy future birth. If sun thou canst not be, then be the humble planet. Aye, if thou art debarred from flaming like the noonday sun upon the snow-capped purity, mount of purity eternal, then choose, O neophyte, a humbler course. Point out the way, however dimly and lost among the host, as does the evening star to those who tread their path in darkness. Behold Mi'kmaq as in his crimson veils his eye sweeps over slumbering earth. Behold the fiery aura of the hand of Lhagpa extended in protecting love over the heads of his ascetics. Both are now servants to Nyima, left in his absence, silent watchers in the night. Yet both in Kalpa's past were both Niyamas and may in future days again become two sons. Such are the falls and rises of the karmic law in nature. Be, O Lanu, like them. Give light and comfort to the toiling pilgrim, and seek out him who knows still less than thou, who in his wretched dissolution sits starving for the bread of wisdom, and the bread which feeds the shadow without a teacher, hope, or consolation, and let him hear the law.
We begin the new year and our consideration of this month's umbrella theme, the path of spiritual evolution, with this question. does life have a purpose? And it seems to be a fitting topic. Whether we look forward to the coming year with hope, indifference, or despair, we have already answered this question to ourselves. For how could we decide to pursue any path of growth and progress, physically, mentally, spiritually? How could we imagine making any kind of meaningful resolution unless we had already decided that there was a purpose to life worthy of our effort and sacrifice? Of course, when you think about it, the larger question is there a purpose to existence? Because when we think of this idea, does life have a purpose, we naturally think of our own lives. Does our life have a purpose? Or do human lives in general have a purpose? But when we extend our consideration, how about for the life within the plant, or the life within the mineral, or the life within the tiniest insect or animal? How about the existence of the planet, of the solar system, of the many stars, the galaxies, the universe itself? Is there a purpose to that existence? Of course, that's the larger question, and it seems very far off, maybe beyond our comprehension. But we think a key to understanding that larger mystery is first solving the mystery of the purpose of our own life satisfactory, because when we think about it, that's the most immediately one important to us. And if we think about it, we might get some clues as to the larger purpose of existence for everything and every being we can imagine. So we said that we've already answered the question to a certain degree, and the reason for that is that we already carry with us a self view and a world view. Now, we may not have sat down and philosophized about it and thought carefully about it. We may not have read many books on the subject, but our attitudes towards ourselves and the world we live in has infiltrated in itself into our mind through the influence of our environment, our society, our teachers, our sciences, our religions. And so we absorb those perspectives, and they form the basis for our purpose, or what we assume to be our purpose in life. So we're going to begin this morning by bringing forth for consideration some of the prevailing common purposes that people have for their lives, and look at them, see how satisfactory they are, and then go to a theosophical perspective on the purpose of life, and if it has a purpose. So we would say that many human beings view themselves as physical and thinking and feeling beings who were born by the accidental concurrence of certain physical and genetic forces, and that their bodies will eventually die. They see the world in which they live to be formed by the same apparent accidental forces, and that it and the circumstances of their environment are either favorable, unfavorable, or indifferent to their own survival and happiness. Facing that perceived reality for them of life, it is natural for them to conclude that there is no ultimate purpose to life other than desiring and planning to pursue one's own happiness, prosperity, and survival, not only for themselves, but for those they love. It is a purpose to life that is at best temporarily satisfying, because even the most fortunate, accomplished, and powerful person will eventually experience disease, death, or suffering. For life is full of suffering, and if we are so fortunate as not to experience too much of it of our own, we certainly witness it being experienced by those we love. And so that is one purpose of life. And when we think about it, to have a purpose of life that is centered primarily in the desire for happiness and the pursuit of happiness in this physical world of physical existence, that desire or that ambition or that purpose is doomed to failure, as it will only increase the amount of suffering that we witness and experience. Why is that? The desire to pursue happiness only for ourselves and those we love is basically selfish and destructive. And if our own individual experience hasn't taught us that already, certainly history teaches that. The accumulation of, and protection of things and conditions that we believe will ensure our personal happiness in this life will lead us to acts that are either indifferent to others or obstructive to the happiness, security, and survival of others. And it also tends to work against us. The very passion and desire and ambition we have to perceive things, to control things, lead us to a condition in which we ourselves are controlled and enslaved by our desires. They chain us to our selfish and desires in the way by which we are whiplashed by anger, envy, and fear, because anything or anyone that threatens the security and happiness of that which we want to achieve in life, of course, leads to those feelings. And like a trapped animal who is chained, we become more selfish, more desperate, and inflict more suffering on ourselves and others. Of course, that's an extreme, but not an unusual situation that many find themselves in. So it is ultimately unsatisfying. But of course, there are many who have the same view, but adopt a purpose of life which is more along the line of just merely survival and thriving in the world. It's enough for them to have to spend their daily existence to earn a living, to pay for necessary expenses, to provide basic needs of food, clothing, and shelter for themselves and their families. And their minds are so taken up by that, that is the purpose of their lives, and they do not have the luxury of time or money or opportunity to pursue anything else. And yet within them there may arise the complaint that there must be something more to life. This cannot be all there be, to struggle this hard and then yet still have to face, like everyone else, disease, suffering, and death. So even that kind of life is unsatisfying. And then there are many others who believe themselves to be physical human beings that have a soul which was created anew by an eternal, all-powerful, and all-knowing supreme being who is able to provide happiness for the soul, not only in this life, as well as eternal happiness for the soul after the death of the body. Believing this to be true, the purpose of life that they naturally adopt is to please their divine creator, and they desire to plan, act in ways to earn their eternal salvation and happiness. And even this is temporarily satisfying at best, because even the most devoted in this way will find their faith tested and their conviction challenged by witnessing unmerited suffering and injustice in the world. They will see good people suffer unjustly, and they will witness the evil seeming to go unpunished, and their faith will be sorely tested. A purpose of life that is exclusively centered in the desire for eternal happiness is likewise doomed to failure, because it only replaces physical selfishness with spiritual selfishness. And in a definite way, it adds to the suffering and injustice in the world. For it may lead the selfish devotee to a life of isolated physical refuge from this world in order to pursue their devotion, or to a withdrawal within that is equally indifferent to the suffering and problems of the world. Such a purpose of life carried to this degree may stain the soul of the devotee through the development of spiritual pride and lack of compassion for the suffering of others. It may chain the soul of the devotee to anger and fear directed towards those whose beliefs and acts threaten their salvation and eternal happiness. So even such a seemingly lofty purpose as trying to live a spiritual life devoted to a supreme being and follow the laws of that divine being for the purpose of achieving eternal salvation and happiness is fraught with the danger of producing problems not only for oneself but for others. So if there is a purpose to life that is not doomed to failure, it would need to extend beyond the exclusive pursuit of individual happiness, whether in this physical life or the life after. It would need to include a learning, a lesson to be gained from the experience of suffering, so we don't react to the fact of suffering we will experience by becoming more selfish or more indifferent or more insensitive. It would need to include compassion for the suffering of others, as well as a commitment to serve the highest interest of others. Theosophy offers the purpose of life that includes learning, love, service. It is based on the idea that the human being is a soul being with the capacity to think, learn, love, and create better conditions. The universe is our school and workshop, as it was brought forth by soul for the spiritual evolution of all soul beings. And therein lies a key to the greater purpose of existence for everything we see, from the universe and solar system to all the kingdoms. Because theosophy teaches that everything is alive, intelligent, in a process of evolution, spiritual evolution, a soul. And so this universe exists for the experience and growth of soul in all its degrees. Well, that is a suggestion, the why and the how we are to pursue that purpose is something we still need to consider. Now, it has been hinted at last week as we entered the time of the year called the winter solstice, when the physical sun begins to move further north. Apparently, the rays of the sun grow stronger on the northern hemisphere, and the days light time become gradually longer, that there is a corresponding awakening and stirring of our spiritual nature. In fact, corresponding to that wave of increasing light and life that will be stirring and growing in the outer world, there is a corresponding increase in development in our inner psychic or astral nature as well. And so plans made, vows made, commitments made, resolutions made to pursue a higher purpose, a better purpose in life, physically, mentally, spiritually, at this particular time, are like catching the wave in the ocean. Our own spiritual and better aspirations are helped along with the rising tide of spiritual and psychic movement in the earth itself. And so it is a good time for us to consider our purpose in life. Is there a way in which we can transform all the mundane activities and duties that we have to perform as physical human beings, in caring for our bodies and caring for our families and earning a living and helping our communities and nation and world thrive? And is there a way in which we can do that without losing sight of our spiritual nature, the care of our souls, and the realization that we are spiritual beings with a grander purpose in life than just thriving and surviving as physical human beings? Is there a way we can pursue that effort without neglecting and serving others less fortunate than ourselves? Theosophy says there is. It's a middle way. And it can be found in the great ethics and teachings of all the world's saviors and reformers. We find it in the Sermon on the Mount, in the Sermon of Buddha. We find it in the great philosophers in Greece, in mystics and sages. We find it in the ethical and moral foundations of the teachings of Islam. It comes basically to a realization that all souls are fundamentally one and identical in essence, because they all share a common spiritual source. Now, we're going to speak of that source in very general ways. We don't want to give it a definite label. Some might prefer to call it God. Some might prefer to call it spirit. But whatever term we give it, we don't want to make the mistake of limiting it by our own conceptions of what it might be. Because wherever we turn, people acknowledge that it must be infinite, eternal, everywhere present, and yet not confined, self-existent, eternal. And so we don't want to limit it by thinking of it as a being, maybe beingness, or the one reality, the ever-existent divine principle. God, if you will, as long as you don't anthropomorphize it and fashion it in your own human image. but it is the spiritual source and essence of all life. It is not absent from anywhere in space. It is co-eternal and one with space, because as we can think of no limit to space, there is no limit to that absolute presence. And so, being that there is this ultimate one reality, we are all interconnected and one. Universal brotherhood in spirit manifests itself as an interdependence and a correspondence in all the different kingdoms of nature. We can observe it in the ecology of systems. We can observe it in the ecology and healthy function of the body. Of course, that brotherhood gets disturbed at times, that harmony and balance gets disturbed at times, but we also witness an ever-increasing tendency for that harmony to be restored, to be brought again to oneness. And that universal law of harmony and balance is given different names. In the East, it is called karma, or action and reaction. In a moral sense, it's the injunction, as a man sows, that shall he also reap. But it can have no meaning to us. We can have no confidence in it if we just limit its application to physical life or to one life, because we see many things occurring that do not seem to have their just result, either for others or for ourselves. And we see ourselves experiencing many things which do not seem to have their just result, our merited cause. And so it necessarily leads us to think about that other fundamental law, that this is a universe of periodicity, of cycles. And when we think about it, karma, or cause and effect, is but an application of the law of cycles. Everything, every cause sends out of an effect, the reaction of which returns as a cycle to the source of its origin. You drop a pebble into a pond and it comes back to you, or comes back to the center. And so out of necessity, we need to consider the idea of reincarnation, that as soul beings, this is not our only existence. We have not been created anew, but we are aspects. We are eternal in nature, the eternal pilgrim, and that we reincarnate from life to life in temporary physical personalities and physical bodies which die. But we do not die. We go through them. We suffer and enjoy and hopefully learn and grow from the experience. Not only grow mentally, but spiritually as well. Grow in our knowledge of ourselves and others. And in the meantime, have the opportunity to correct old errors, help others who have helped us, and help those who are suffering. And why? What is the ultimate purpose? Well, theosophy puts forth the idea that not only is there a law of brotherhood or unity or interdependence, not only is there a law of nature, of cycles and cause and effect, but there is a law of evolution and growth physically, mentally, spiritually, that is witnessed in all the kingdoms of nature. So we draw our purpose of life from observing nature. If nature shows an ever-tending path towards perfectibility, the improvement of form, the improvement of intelligence within the form, so too we, as co-workers and mirroring nature, can also have that kind of purpose in life. But we have the ability to think and reason and choose and develop a individual course of self-induced and self-devised effort as to how we will develop spiritually, mentally, and physically, how we will help ourselves and other human beings, but always with the realization that whatever we cannot fully achieve in this life, there are other lives, and that because we are inherently one with that absolute principle, we are inherently perfect. What does the Bible say? Be ye perfect, even as your Father in heaven is perfect. We have set before us the ideal and the fact of human perfectibility. Whether we see it in the before mentioned saviors and reformers, whether we view it as the teachings and the lives of the great Mahatmas and depths and hierophants and wise beings that have appeared in every nation and race, they stand before us as a promise and a hope that if they have made their purpose in life to work for the benefit of others, to work for the purposes of soul and spirit and the unity of life, if they have made it their purpose and can achieve what they have, then it is possible for each and every one of us to do the same. So how can we bring that knowledge that we are soul beings using physical bodies into our everyday lives? To the extent we can answer that question for ourselves, we find a better purpose in life. Our lives will not change. We'll still wake up tomorrow and still have to do the same job and still have to take care of the same people and still have to get dressed and do everything else. But the inner attitude will change. The inner conviction and vision of what's it all for will change. And that act, because we bring to it a more profound inner feeling and thought, that mere act on this physical plane will have much more force, much more wider effect than we'd ever imagined. Because we do not act just physically. Our actions are also mental and they're spiritual, and they have their effect as well. So it's not just a matter of finding a greater purpose, but a greater place and mission in this world we live in. So we'll stop here with these ideas and give you a chance to ask some questions or make some comments on your thoughts about this subject. Does life have a purpose? Yes.
Well, last week we talked about the solstice, as was mentioned, and it came with the idea that the sun gods would go underground and sort of thrill the souls or seeds that were there, encouraging them to grow and begin their journey and so forth. Are there folks who do that for us? Are we helped in such a way, or do we have to do it all by ourselves?
As all interesting questions, they don't have a single answer. They have ramifications which lead us to so many considerations. But it starts with the myths and the legends of the sun gods, who, as we read of their lives, there's a common thread where they either go into the underworld, they go into Hades, or they go into some dark region for a certain number of days, perhaps 3 days, and while they're commune and work for the resurrection of those in that state, and they rise from that state. In one sense, that is us. We are those sun gods, but we are living in a life that eclipses, in a very definite sense, our perception that we are sun gods. In this case, the planetary body that obstructs our view of the sun, we really are, is our own thought and feeling and perceptions and desires. But if we can remove them, we will see who and what we are. That we are divine in essence. We are thinking, spiritual, creative beings with will, imagination and thought and power. And our mission here, our purpose in incarnation, is twofold. Not just for our own spiritual evolution, because even for soul beings, there is no ultimate absolute perfection. There's always greater opportunity for learning and expansion of our faculties as we live in an infinite series of universes, and our very essence is infinite. But beyond that purpose, there is also contact with the lives and intelligences in the lower kingdoms of nature, of which our bodies are composed. The intelligent lives in the mineral, animal, and vegetable kingdoms within our body, as well as our world. There's life and intelligence in there, and they live in relative darkness spiritually. Although as soul beings, we bring the light of mind and its influence and its power to either raise up and influence the intelligence in those kingdoms or to deteriorate it, retard it. And of course, if we do that, nature responds in kind to us, becomes our friend or foe, depending on whether we are the friend and foe of nature. But if we, as soul beings in general, can perform that for the lives and intelligences lower than us in the animal kingdom, do we have elder brothers, elder sisters, elder human souls who have passed through the trials, the sufferings, the tribulations, the various mistakes, have learned from them, and bit by bit resolved to overcome them, and have achieved greater knowledge and power? Are there not those beings who also look for the opportunity and have the opportunity from time to time to come and help us, to raise us up out of our darkness? And this is the teaching, that the personages that we see appearing from time to time in the past and in more current history are examples of human souls, perfected in a higher degree than ourselves, but feeling themselves one with us, who do make that effort. And of course, at this particular time of year, it is natural for us to recognize and try to emulate their effort. Yes?
Well, is that because the energy and the force of the whole universe is going to be the strongest between now and Easter time?
Well, we could not speak for the whole universe, but we certainly can speak as we understand it, for the cycles of life that affect this earth. There are rises and falls in nature, as our reading from the Voice says, that what is one day a planet, could at another time and another period of evolution be a star, a sun, and vice versa. There are rises and falls in nature, just as there are rises and falls in us. And if we track the cycles of our mood and energy, physical, psychic, and mental, and spiritual, we see we have ebbs and flows, highs and lows of that. And so too in nature, physical nature, psychic nature. Those who have tracked this through the ages have seen that there are certain times of the year when nature seems to respond in that way. They seem to correlate with the seasons, and very often the various festivals that occurred among different nations were given reference to this fact in nature. And so we see throughout ancient times in various cultures, and eventually adopted by the Christians as well, a reverence for the rising tide of light and energy and life at this particular time of year, a sense of it, of a new hope, a new rising that is felt, and recognizing that, they try to awaken it and fulfill it in their own nature. A new year, a new cycle, a new purpose for life. Yes.
If we look at the months the way they're named, the last, like September, October, November, December, that would be like the 7th, 8th, and 9th, then the 10th month. So what we understand is that they're numbered that way because March used to be considered the first month or the new year, but now we're celebrating in January 1st. Is there any reason for that?
No, was there a certain calendar that did that?
The calendar that we're under now.
The Gregorian calendar.
Yes.
Okay, so we're talking about a calendar that came into existence at a certain time and a certain culture, and prior to that there was a different calendar being used in Western lands, the Julian calendar, and in different countries we see different names to the days of the week. But, you know, very often, once again, there was a tendency to imitate what was seen in nature. And the cycles of the year were either based on the cycles of the sun, or 1 year, or the cycles of the moon. And as the moon had a definite cycle occurring every 28 days, In many calendars, we see reference to this 28-day cycle and those so-called months that developed and the years. So, you know, certainly from time to time, calendars must change. But the new year we're talking about is not January 1st. We're talking about a whole time of a year. And a period of time that... you know, cycles don't begin and end at a definite point. There's a sort of overlapping between one and another. Even when we go to sleep or get up in the morning, we know there's sort of like a in-between time when we're half asleep, half awake. Cycles of day and night, we have a period of dawn and dusk overlapping there. And so for this new year is really a period of time that's going from December 21st, or what we call the winter solstice, to January 4th, a period of time when we see this first stirring in nature. And so among various cultures, the celebration of the new year occurs at this time. Not all cultures, but many of them choose it for that reason. But regardless of what culture it is, we ourselves can recognize and feel that at this time of the year, there seems to be something different, something special, something quiet. And it does not relate to the birth of any one Savior or the death of any one Savior, because it was something that was self, was recorded and observed and practiced by nations and races long before the life of any one Savior. So it is a cycle of nature. It is a cycle within ourselves that is respected and, as we said, emulated. Yes?
So we know when we hear the fundamentals in class and we speak of, you know, each being as being a spark, a ray of that deific essence. When we combine that with the idea of what is the purpose in life, is the intelligence in that deific essence, we're just having, I mean, we understand, we're having a hard time explaining the question that we want to ask. We know once there's materialization, we understand the purpose of life is to elevate soul, elevate the lower kingdoms, and eventually to perfection. But that whole process, what is the purpose of having the materialization at all? Does that make sense?
Yes. When we think of the self, ourselves, in essence, it occurs to us that we sometimes think of that self as the observer, which is changeless, the same throughout all the conditions of our lives. But when we think about that self and observe it ourselves, we realize that there's an impulse within that self to grow and experience, to know, to act. It exists, it is, but it is always growing, it's always expanding, it always seems to want more, experience more. Who among us is satisfied with even having everything we could imagine? There's always something we want more. And even those that believe that they will exist after the death of the body eternally as soul still imagine that there will be some type of expansion and growth, purification, perfection. They cannot imagine things being static. So what is the purpose of all this? What is the purpose of the existence of the universe? The universe is for the growth of soul. Soul is behind directing the manifestation of all the instruments it will use in nature for experience, the physical instruments, the planetary instruments, the kingdoms, all the means by which life and intelligence can experience and grow. And when that experience is exhausted, when those forms come to an end, then soul, intelligence, perception, that creative power will bring forth a new condition by which it can grow. So there is no beginning or ending to that growth of soul. There's no beginning or ending to the succession of worlds or bodies or personalities or experiences or universes that soul can experience in. There are beginnings and ends to our periods of evolution. There are beginnings and ends to the forms we use, but not to the process. There are periods of activity and rest, activity and rest. So that's why we're here. We're continuing in a journey. And it is a great, understandably sometimes difficult for us because we are raised in an environment where we are taught such definite limits to our nature. We are limited to what we can know and understand of the workings of a mysterious God. We are limited by science to understand ourselves as physical human beings who live but once. And we are limited by our own self-conceptions of our personality and what we think we can and cannot do. So this idea of the potential for infinite perfectibility is something that we need to reassume. And we can only do that by, as we said, sweeping away the clouds that eclipse our view of the sun we really are, of the sun gods we really are. Mm. In the back.
Regarding those fundamentals, the last one that was mentioned was evolution. Mm-hmm. So if that is a fact in nature, which we can prove through science, we can prove that the only place that evolution can take place is here. Because after the death of the physical, or at night when we're sleeping, and apart from the experiences of the physical, there's not the possibility of doing anything. Mm. And it has to be done on this plane with all of the help that was mentioned. Mm-hmm. So it's really a gift in a sense.
So the contribution here is that if the purpose of life is to learn and evolution is part of that process of learning, then causes need to be set up, the effect of which will lead to our growth. And as said, that kind of evolution or experience of cause and effect can only be done on this physical plane. We set up the causes here, we experience the effects here. Now, according to the teachings of Theosophy, cause and effect is a universal law that extends beyond physical life. It extends into our mental, moral, and spiritual life. It extends beyond the life of the body. It pertains to the life of the soul, not only during life, but the life of the body, but after the death of the body. And so there are causes that will reap the effect in the various religions. They teach of the after-death states being effects of causes set up in this life. But the idea brought forth here is the further evolution, the further development, can only, for a human being, can only be done through conscious choice, through contrast, through the choice between the better and the dearer, between good and evil, between the relative and the permanent, between what should be done and what should not be done. And that can only be, those choices can only be made in this objective physical world we know, not in a subjective state. Just like in a dream, we can experience the effects of our physical living in a dream. but we cannot make new choices there that will improve ourselves here. We can only make those choices while we are in the waking state. So this gets into the idea of the means to achieve our life purpose. And of course, that's going to be the subject of next Sunday's class and talk, which we invite you to attend. This morning, we just want to sort of set the table for our month, to look at the various ways people answer the question of what is life's purpose, and to offer you a perspective of theosophy answer to that question, why and how we can have a higher purpose in life. So our meeting is adjourned, and Happy New Year.
I didn't get a chance to ask this. I had to go throughout the room. But as far as advancement, purpose, what of the soulless, bodiless,
I'm sorry, just let me just. Yeah, go ahead.